From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our connections with it. I'm Chris Cherniak. Nell Larson is on vacation this week, so joining me as co-host is Lynn Ware Peak. Hey, Lynn.
Good morning, Chris.
Well, Lynn, it may be hard to imagine that before 1970, a factory could release black clouds of toxic chemicals into the air or dump millions of gallons of waste into adjacent rivers, and all that was perfectly legal. How was that possible? Well, because there was no EPA, no Clean Air Act, no Clean Water Act. There were, in fact, few legal or regulatory mechanisms to protect our environment and human health.
Now, all that changed in April of 1970 when Wisconsin Senator Gaylord Nelson created Earth Day as a way to force regulatory change on these issues. 10 million Americans demonstrated in different U.S. cities, and it worked. Yeah. Because in December of 1970, Richard Nixon established the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and with it came policy and regulations designed to reduce and control the amount of pollutants industry and individuals could release into our air, land, and water.
Right. Today is Earth Day, and instead of looking at ways we continue to gobble up the planet's resources, we thought we'd take a look at how people and organizations are doing things to reduce their impacts upon nature's giant pantry.
Yes, like our first guest, we'll talk to Dee Williams. She's the author of The Big Tiny, a built-it-myself memoir. Now, it's a book that looks at the growing movement to live smaller in house and material possessions, that is. Mm-hmm. Dee built and lives in a home. It's 84 square feet. That's not a typo.
No.
It's 84 square feet in size, and we're really excited to talk to her.
That's right. And then Lisa Schneider joins us to talk about Habitat for Humanity's latest LEED Platinum home they've constructed and how Habitat homes are operating with greater energy efficiency.
And finally, Brent Giles from Powder Corp stops by to announce the winners of the Protect Your Playground contest. So this is a contest that challenged community members to come up with innovative ways to protect and conserve our local environment.
The environment, our connections with it, and impacts upon it. That's what This Green Earth is all about. And stay tuned right after these words from our underwriters.
Spring cleaning, moving, remodeling, donate your gently used construction materials and household items to the ReStore, your local home improvement reuse store today. Visit habitat-utah.org to see our list of accepted items or call 435-487-9015 to learn how to donate to the ReStore. Your donation helps keep thousands of tons of materials out of the waste stream and generates revenues for Habitat's affordable housing programs. Habitat for Humanity of Summit and Wasatch Counties is a local nonprofit organization.
Rocky Mountain Power is proud to support KPCW and This Green Earth. Rocky Mountain Power offers watt-smart advice such as avoiding the use of large appliances like a washer or dryer between 2 and 8 p.m. because it helps reduce energy demand and keeps costs down for all of us. More ways to save energy at wattsmart.com.
And welcome back to This Green Earth. It's a weekly talk show about our connections with and impacts upon the environment.
Right.
I'm Lynn Ware Peak. I'm sitting in for Nell Larson today, and I'm here with my co-host Chris Cherniak.
Hello.
Well, 76% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck, and most homeowners pay a mortgage that consumes 30 to 50% of that paycheck. The average home size is about 2,600 square feet, and here in Park City, likely much bigger. A growing movement in this country and around the world is called the tiny house movement. People are saying, enough of all this consumption. Let's go small and stylish. How much is enough? How much is too much? We strive for bigger and better under the roof, over our heads, but those in the tiny house movement strive for freedom from all that. Efficiency with space and financial freedom, less impact on the environment. Today we'll speak with Dee Williams, who did what many of us may not dare to. She abandoned her four-bedroom house and built, stick by stick, by herself, her own tiny house, 84 square feet, in fact. She's written a book about it. It's called The Big Tiny, a built-it-myself memoir, and we're pleased to have Dee Williams on the show for this Earth Day.
Right.
Dee Williams, welcome to This Green Earth.
Hi, it's great to meet you guys.
Yeah, happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day.
Well, the first thing that we need to establish here, Dee, is that, you know, many of us have this sort of dream. Let's downsize. Let's make things simpler. But we don't have a catalyst to, launch us into that world. You had a catalyst. So explain that part of your personal life.
Sure. You know, I was living in a big normal house. I had three bedrooms, you know, the typical mortgage that you just mentioned. And I landed in the hospital with a heart attack and was diagnosed with congestive heart failure. I was 40 years old at the time. And, you know, in the stride of my career and, you know, this dream of, you know, catching the American dream with a big house and kind of where I was going. And it was funny because I came home from the hospital, or ironic or interesting anyway, and sitting in my living room, I'm looking around and all of this stuff that I was surrounded by, I had just gotten a new couch. You know, I'm sitting on the couch and it's just like, you know, I spent so much time and energy so I could buy this couch, you know, time and energy at work. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't make sense. I felt really upside down in my life in a lot of ways because the thing that I really, really wanted was time. I wanted time to go see my parents and see my family and hang out with my friends. And I wanted time to watch my nephews grow up and to see my niece get married. And, you know, I wasn't sure that was going to be a part of my future. And then, you know, all of a sudden kind of recognizing that I kind of wasted a lot of time doing stuff that wasn't necessarily what I wanted to do.
Hmm. So the tiny house movement at that point, that was 2004, correct?
That's right,
And was it a real movement at that point, or where did you come up with the idea?
Oh, you know, I was actually sitting, I write about this in The Big Tiny, I was sitting in the doctor's office waiting for, you know, a follow-up visit. And I read an article about a guy named Jay Schaefer who had built a little house very similar to mine, and it just lit me up. I was just like, maybe that's something I could do. Number one, the idea of building just sounded awesome. I was already a frequent, shopper at our local ReStore, Habitat ReStore, and we had a rebuilding center, you know, so I'd go and dig through stuff all the time for my big house. So the idea of trying to build a little tiny house, largely out of salvaged material, sounded awesome to me. It sounded really engaging and a wonderful distraction from feeling a bit lost inside my body and a bit lost with my diagnosis. So I lay all of that on Jay Schaefer, who owns a company called Four Lights Houses, for inspiring me.
Right. You actually got on an airplane and went to Iowa City and visited.
That's right. I my brother and his family live in Iowa City, so I used that as my excuse to get out there and then enlisted my brother, because he's a good brother, to help me track Jay down and go visit Jay and, you know, kind of walk around his house and crawl underneath his house. His house is built on wheels, and my house is built on wheels. And so it was this awesome opportunity to kind of check it out, step into it, and see if it could work for me.
Right. So you come back motivated, and I guess the first thing you have to do is find a trailer and then figure out the dimensions. So 84 square feet, why that number?
Oh, you know, that was the size of the trailer that I could find. But I also spent a fair amount of time wandering around with a tape measure in one hand. So all of a sudden I was measuring the amount of counter space I needed to make a sandwich. And, how much of the space in the refrigerator was for actual food as opposed to condiments? You know, and how much space did I need to feel comfortable walking through a door jamb and, you know, changing my clothes? You know, I didn't want to create a space where I could, you know, likely snap a hip trying to get my pants on.
Right.
So, all of a sudden I was playing anthropologist with myself and observing how much space I needed and what I was doing with my time. And that is what kind of led to that. Oh, I could do this. I could live in a 7 by 12 foot space and be happy. And it's played itself out. You know, 10 years later, the experiment continues, and I'm still, you know, I walk in the door. My house smells like cedar and pine.
Right.
I got the floorboards for the loft. I have a sleeping loft. And, you know, that came from a house fire. All of the cedar came into the rebuilding center, and I snapped it up. I wasn't sure what I was going to use it for because the idea of building a little house hadn't come to me yet. But, boy, once I started building, it was like all of these building materials that I had grabbed at different times, I could put to use and created this wonderful little space.
Now, Dee, if you look into the tiny house movement, you find that the square footage is typically 100 to 400 square feet. And I'm not sure if, you know, to qualify, not that anyone needs qualification, but to qualify, I mean, a tiny house is by definition one that fits on top of a trailer, right? That you can hook up. Or not necessarily.
I'm kind of fast and loose with the definitions, to be honest with you. I teach workshops through a company called Portland Alternative Dwellings, and the folks that come to those workshops, you know, our intent is to kind of tool people to know how to build something, and whether that structure is a tool shed, a chicken coop, a tiny house on wheels, or a tiny house that's ground bound and 1,000 square feet. You know, I don't think it's the size specifically that matters. The important thing is that you've done the hard work to build something that fits you, that you've taken a look at the difference between what you want and what you need, and pared things down so that you're able to build something that's reasonable and useful and beautiful, and it fits you.
So there is one important item in your beautiful tiny house that I would have a hard time doing without. Most people would. Of course, you know what that is.
I do.
TV?
Scrabble board.
I'm sorry. Am I missing
table.
Something more fundamental?
Right. It's something more fundamental. Something we use every day.
The shower, right?
Okay.
Was it right?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
I was actually thinking running water.
I don't have running water.
Okay, so let's talk about why.
Because it's a conundrum, for one. You know, water in, water out. You know, I bring water into my house. I wasn't sure where I was going to land while I was building. You know, I had some dear friends that lived about 100 miles away, and I had talked with them about moving into their backyard. And, you know, I wasn't sure if that was going to be a good fit over the long haul. It was a small yard. I really, you know, I had this Norman Rockwell kind of dream of living in the country where, you know, I would make friends with all the woodland creatures, you know, and be happy as a clam. So this was inside, you know, the city and kind of backed into an alley. So aesthetically, it wasn't quite what I had imagined. So, you know, I'm building it on wheels, so that's cool. And but I didn't want to impose with my water, you know, water in, and then if I'm going to drain water, am I just going to drain it into the center of their yard and all of a sudden their kids are going to be playing soccer through a swimming pool, you know? So doing without water was one way that I could minimize my impact. And it was also, you know, I had just taken a trip to Guatemala. I had gone down there to help build a school, and, you know, most of the folks down there live without running water, and they seemed to be happy. Crazy idea. So I decided to set it up as an experiment and see if I could learn to shower at work or the gym or at my friend's house and still be happy, still somehow, you know, make meaning of my life without water. And it worked.
It did.
I still complain about it sometimes,
right.
But on the whole, it's absolutely fine.
Okay, talk a little bit about how you built this, how much time it took to build, and ultimately the cost.
It took me 3 months and about $10,000 to build.
Wow.
And, you know, the lion's share of the cost, almost the full quarter of the cost, was the solar voltaic system. I have a small solar electric system. And that crazy thing was $2,200 for 240 watts, which isn't very much, you know. And my friends who have invested in grid-tied solar systems kind of look at mine and they're like, oh, that's not a real system. That's just like the idea of a system. So they give me a hard time. But it was stupidly expensive. And the 3 months, you know, a lot of the folks that take our workshops are kind of like I was in that they kind of launch into it with a little bit of knowledge and a lot of gung-ho attitude, and which means mistakes are going to be made. So I think now that I'm a more accomplished builder, I think it would take me about half that time. But, mistakes were made.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah. So you must know, so you lived or maybe still do in Olympia, Washington. You work for this Portland alternative dwelling. So you're probably very familiar with regulations in both Washington and Oregon. But that's kind of my next question. Utah's quite regulated, and I wish, you know, the planning director is just about 25 yards from here. I wish I had drug him down here to have him ask those questions. But, you know, composting toilets and not being hooked up and no running water, and talk about that a little bit.
Just area size, too, yeah. Limits on that.
Sure. I want to clarify, you know, I work with Portland Alternative Dwellings to help folks learn how to build, and zoning and code enforcement is one of the most challenging things that people have to deal with. In my paying job, the thing that I really, where I have my health benefit is as a hazardous waste inspector for the Department of Ecology. So I am the code person.
Yeah.
You know, so all of a sudden, you know, I don't do building code. I do, you know, hazardous waste rules.
Right.
But it's the same. It's the same thing, and the encouragement that I give to folks is to go down to their planning office and talk to the code people and find out what their concerns are, what's legal, what isn't, what's appropriate and not, what the concerns are. Is there a health risk, a fire risk? You know, why is the local municipality set up so that, you know, it doesn't allow certain things like composting? It's funny because inside the city limits of Olympia, you're not allowed to compost humanure, but in the county, which is less than a mile away, you drive outside the city, you can.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's different everywhere you go. And so my encouragement to folks is to, you know, walk the 30 yards over to your planning person and have a good conversation with them and find out what the ins and outs are.
If you just joined us, you're listening to This Green Earth, and we're speaking with Dee Williams. She's the author of the book, The Big Tiny, a Built It Myself memoir. Dee built and lives in a home that's 84 square feet in size, which I kind of laid out what 84 square feet, roughly 7 by 12. That's half my kitchen. And that's just unbelievable, trying to, you know, condense my world into that area. But I also thought that the smallest place I ever lived in was roughly 250 square feet. It was a garage, nice garage place in the Berkeley Hills. And what was wonderful about that place compared to other tiny apartments that I had lived in New York City or Philadelphia or so, was the fact that there were two things. It was mostly wood and lots of windows. And those two W's made all the difference to me, because there was that wood, like you talked about, the cedar, the smell of cedar and pine and the organic sense of that wood. And then the windows, light, natural light coming in and a view out, which makes the living space much larger. Is that
right? Right.
Is that, yeah.
There are a lot of books out there on small house design, and Sarah Sasanka has written the not so big house, and there are lots of other great books out there on these little tricks that you can play on your mind in order to feel liberated in a small space.
Mm.
So, you know, I originally studied architectural engineering, and that design piece stuck with me. But it's kind of intuitive in a lot of ways, and I encourage folks to take a look at how they feel when they walk into a big space like a church or a museum or a bank, and you know, you're kind of reverent and alone with that space.
Mm-hmm.
In a smaller space, you know, if it's designed well, you're going to feel exactly like you said, Chris. You're going to feel invited out. You're going to feel a sense of solitude without necessarily feeling claustrophobic or like
right.
You're suddenly, you know, afraid to turn around, you know, for fear of banging an elbow or chipping a tooth. So, you know, you're absolutely right. And when you walk into my house, I've got the kitchen on the left, the bathroom on the right, and the exposed rafters for the sleeping loft overhead. And everything has this really beautiful golden amber wood tone to it. You take a couple steps, and you're standing out from underneath the loft, and you're in the what I call the great room. It really is great, but it's small.
Right.
And I've got a skylight overhead. There are windows on either side. There's a window in the peak, in the pointy part of the back wall. And all of a sudden, you start small, and all of a sudden, you're in this larger space, which suddenly feels massive. And it's a little trick. It's a little trick on your brain.
Right. Mm. And I also that sense of height, too.
Yes.
Volume.
Right.
Adds,
mm-hmm.
Adds. And one other thing is that I had room for a couch, a nice futon couch, and a chair. And sitting in different – having the opportunity to sit in different positions in the place also created almost a different sense of being. You know, just being able to sit around and it creates this. I'm not doing
right.
Explaining, but that adds to the size or the volume
right.
of the place. So.
Right. You know, I have to tell you, the favorite place I'd like to sit around in my little house is up in the loft,
mm-hmm.
and it's in the pointy part of the roof. You know, so you go up a ladder, 7-foot ladder. And you can kneel, walk across the bed. I can kneel, kind of standing up, if you know what I mean. You know,
right?
Kneel, and I've got a big skylight over the bed, and there's a window at the back. And sitting there, you know, I can see kind of the ever expanding universe out of that skylight.
Mm.
And you know, right. you roll over in the middle of the night when it starts to rain. You can hear it on the. I have a metal corrugated metal roof. You hear that, you wake up, you look out the window, and all of a sudden, it's like you're on vacation. You know, mm-hmm. you're out in nature without being cold or miserable and
right.
wet. You're in a tent, but not. You know, you're hanging in a woodsy cabin, but you have to get up in the morning and go to work.
Right.
You know, and that transference to, you know, our natural living environment at these incidental moments, you know, it changes you. It really breeds a sense of appreciation and gratitude.
Mm.
And I know that sounds cheesy, but all I can say is that my heart has kind of been changed by the being, you know,
right.
with my head a couple of feet from the elements.
Right.
Right. And you were also so ready for that change. I mean, gratitude and appreciation you must experience every day because you're alive. That congenital heart disease didn't get you. And so you were much more open to suggestions, shall we say. And I think, you know, a lot of us would like to have that without having the congenital heart disease, of course.
Right, right.
I wanted to ask you briefly about, you know, we think about this in Park City, you know, it's, you know, probably Park City. It's a ski resort town. We're at 7,000 feet. So much of what you do is connected to the outside. And I wonder about the winter time. Now, I did see some tiny houses up in Jackson, Wyoming when I was there last month. Mm-hmm. They were rentals. And so obviously, you know, it's working there. But what's your comment on that?
Well, you know, again, I write about, in the Big Tiny, I write about being pretty miserable in the winter, in part because my heater doesn't work as in the way that I thought it would, and I also poorly insulated the floor.
Mm.
So, you know, when I teach workshops now, I address those design flaws. So, you know, I am happy in my house as far as physical comfort goes. I'm happy. Perfectly happy about 85% of the time. In the wintertime, there are a handful of days, you know, the weather in Olympia is pretty moderate. So during those days, I kvetch. I complain. I dress like I'm going snowmobiling
right,
as I crawl off the bed, you know. And the thing is those times pass.
Yeah.
You know, I get warm. I'm not miserable once I bundle up. I sleep with a 50-pound dog, so I stay nice and toasty. But, you know, I encourage people to take a look at, you know, if they're willing to be uncomfortable a part of the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really clever way of designing to be happy 85% of the time. I think that's a really good mark. It means that you're not wasting a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Final question, Dee. What couple things would you change if you were to do it again?
Oh, well, the insulation in the floor.
Yeah.
you know, I'll be honest with you. If I was to build today, I would probably either go smaller, because I've got a lot of wasted space as a single person, or I'd go bigger and I'd fall in love and invite somebody to live with me.
And
right now, I'm not sure which way to go.
Wow. Okay.
So fate will help you.
There's
with
actually
that.
4 or 5 square feet of wasted space that you're saying you could go down to 78 square feet.
Yeah, actually 56.
Okay.
I've worked on a design for 56 square feet, and you know, it just doesn't involve the loft, you know, and it doesn't involve as much storage. I've got wasted space for, you know, I thought I was going to want a lot more, and I built the space based on my old behaviors of being a book collector, and
right.
You know, I had a lot of music CDs, and now so much is digital.
Yeah.
You just don't need as much space for stuff like that.
There you go. Dee Williams, she's the author of The Big Tiny, a built-it-myself memoir. Dee, where would you suggest people go online to learn more about the tiny house movement and your efforts?
Well, if they go to padtinyhouses.com, that's P-A-D,
right.
Portland Alternative Dwellings, they can learn more about The Big Tiny, the book, and where I'll be reading over the next couple of weeks. And then they can also learn about the tiny house movement and plans, workshops. Come to a workshop. I would love to meet people.
Sure.
Sounds great.
Are you going to be in this area?
No. We teach all of our workshops up in Portland, Oregon, which is one of the funnest places to visit on the planet.
Absolutely.
Indeed, it is.
I'm surprised I haven't seen you or Tiny Houses on Portlandia yet.
Oh, there are some other spoofs. I should email them to you.
All right. That's a deal. All right. Dee, thanks so much for joining us on This Green Earth, and hopefully we'll stay in touch.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Dee.
Hey, let's take a break for a few underwriters, and we come back. We'll be talking to Lisa Schneider from Habitat for Humanity, what they're doing with their homes to make them more energy efficient. Stay tuned. Right after these words from our underwriters.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
This is Dana Edwards on behalf of Vail Resorts and Cannons Resort supporting KPCW. This year, we developed partnerships with 25 local nonprofits to support programs like the fourth grade program at Swanner Preserve and Eco Center. Every fourth grader in Summit County will experience Utah's ecosystem firsthand and see science come to life through infield classes. Thanks to Swanner for making science cool.
Rocky Mountain Power is proud to support KPCW and This Green Earth. Rocky Mountain Power Watt Smart New Homes Program offers incentives for building a new energy-efficient home that can help you enjoy year-round comfort, higher resale value, and lower energy bills. To learn more or find a builder in your area, wattsmart.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak. Guest co-host with me is Lynn Ware Peake, and in the studio is Lisa Schneider. She's the executive director at Habitat for Humanity for Summit and Wasatch County. Thanks, Lisa, for joining us. And on the phone is Alan Angle, he is the Green Coordinator for Habitat for Humanity. Alan, thanks for joining us.
I'm glad to be here.
Lisa, let's start with you. Give us the rundown on what's happening at Habitat. You got a new home?
We do.
A LEED Platinum home.
We do. And first of all, good morning and happy Earth Day.
Oh, thank you.
And yep, we have a LEED Platinum Award ceremony happening today at 4 o'clock up on Marsac Avenue. And this is Habitat's second LEED Platinum, which is a remarkable achievement, especially in the affordable housing realm. And one of the things I've heard over and over again in the community is, that's an affordable house.
Right.
That doesn't look like affordable housing. And the entire purpose behind going green is to create a very healthy home, a sustainable home that has low operating costs for our homeowners, who are hardworking folks who work at Deer Valley and in the resort industry here. We want them to have, a thriving life in Park City,
right,
and to live here for the long term and affordably.
Okay, so give us some specs about, you say that this doesn't look like an affordable home. What size is it, and what does it have that makes it LEED Platinum?
Sure. So both of the homes, and I think most people have had a chance to drive by, they're approximately 1,200 square feet. So they're modest homes. Mm-hmm. They're three-bedroom, one-and-a-half bath. They are extremely well-built in terms of the amount of insulation and ceiling, creating a very energy-efficient home. The furnaces and hot water heaters in those homes are Energy Star, very high efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Just Right Heating did the HVAC design. And I sat through a workshop that Dan Dearden did for the local home builders association in one of our homes and learned that when you approach your HVAC design very scientifically from a physics perspective, and you're really – you were there. You remember this.
Right.
When you're paying attention to maximizing airflow in that system, guess what you get? You actually get that high energy efficiency out of the furnace. Your furnace is going to last longer.
Right.
You're going to have greater comfort in the home, and you're going to spend less in – the gas, these are gas furnaces,
right,
the gas,
mm-hmm,
you're using in the home. So that's one example.
It's curious. You would think that that is standard practice to maximize airflow in a system, but obviously not. I mean,
no.
This is what you learn about sustainable and green building practices, is how we aren't efficient in our standard building.
It's true, and I may offend some people by saying this, but the fact of the matter is we do have contractors in the world who who learned the trade, maybe from a family member or something like that, and they know what they know, but maybe they don't know some of the scientific approaches for putting in an HVAC system that's,
right,
highly efficient. And what I learned from Dan Dearden, who comes from the scientific background, is that, 50% of his work is going back into homes and redoing HVAC systems.
Really?
Yeah.
And making them better.
Yeah. Because it always happens because somebody's home is really uncomfortable. They've got one room,
sure,
that's too hot, one room that's too cold, and they go back in and they discover all kinds of problems.
Yeah.
So that's one area. Another, a really simple thing is LED lighting. It costs a little more on the front side, but LED lighting in our homes is saving our homeowners $25 a month. And that may seem like, coffee change, but that adds up. That's money that can go into
a college
fund.
Sounds like about half of what the electrical bill would be on a 1,200-foot square foot home. I mean, I think
a third.
Yeah.
Or so.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah.
Well, Ellen Agel, let's bring you in, since you're the sustainability coordinator.
Sure.
Did I get
touching
that right?
On the two items, the greatest improvement, I think, in HVAC design, and it's become a great challenge. This home is actually earning two certifications at the same time. The first is Energy Star certification, which is purely energy, and the second is LEED Platinum, which looks at seven additional categories of green and sustainable construction. And all of them wrap together. At any rate, looking at the expansion in HVAC sophistication, what is happening now is load balancing room by room, and that's very important. It drives duct design. It drives ultimately the design of the equipment. And the ducts have to be sealed very, very tightly. Return air is a major consideration so that the air flows into a room and flows back out rather than just being stymied by high pressure buildup in a single room. So there's a lot of engineering in a sophisticated HVAC system. And this house accomplishes that through the expertise of the contractor who was very up to speed with this. Let's see, on the lighting, the LED savings over conventional, it's about a third of their monthly bill for energy cost. So it's quite significant, especially in a lower category of income, where energy cost is a high percentage of take-home pay.
Right.
Exactly. Now let's talk, Alan, about the affordability concept. I would assume, or is it correct to assume, that it's not as affordable up front because you're paying for things? I mean, I know anytime the city considers doing a LEED certified building, the certification, it's, you know, on its own is quite expensive. Is the affordability really
so
over the life of it?
That I'm just delighted by your question because that is a common impression, and it's not accurate at all. The additional cost in this building of green certification and all of the delta cost increases of improved equipment was about $2 a square foot. That's negligible in any scale of construction. And by the way, that ramps up. The largest house that I know of in LEED Platinum is in Jackson Hole. That's a 10,000 square foot house. Their additional cost of certification and building costs additionally were $20,000. That's $2 a square foot. So it's very easy to do. The reason it comes nets out to be relatively affordable are a number of factors. One is our building codes are so good already here that to go a little bit farther is not extraordinarily expensive, and there are a lot of efficiencies. For example, in the very, very good framing in this house, there's a lot less lumber in the walls, so you save on direct materials costs. There are a lot of efficiencies in planning things ahead. In particular, between a plumber and an HVAC person, they're usually trying to put things in the same chase. But if you have a coordination of efforts ahead of time, there are a lot of efficiencies during construction. So a Greenville house often goes up more quickly.
Okay.
And on top of that, of course, there are a lot of manufacturers' incentives and power company rebates.
Right. Yeah, so, and that's what you guys have really been able to specialize on, doing
right.
multiple houses.
Absolutely.
Well,
so if you look at the raw cost increase of green building and green certification, yes, they're there, but it nets out to a much lower figure than is commonly perceived due to the great efficiencies.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so attracting, adding to Alan's points, really attracting the right kinds of partners
right.
for this was key. This is, you know, Habitat made a commitment and is making an ongoing commitment to sustainable building practices.
Right.
And we're doing it because not only the lower operating costs for our homeowners, but for health. We're very interested in long-term health for our homeowners. Our homes have excellent air quality, and we know that home air quality is one of the number one predictors for respiratory health in
right.
the home.
Mm-hmm.
The children growing up in these homes on MARSAC are going to have fewer physician's visits and fewer absent days from school because the quality of air in there, there's all the materials are low VOC. So that is a big commitment for Habitat.
Good. I'm glad you brought that up. So what mm-hmm. about plans in the last couple minutes? Plans going ahead, next home,
well, we're
similar
we're,
process?
Yeah, exactly. So any new construction, it will be the same. And in the meantime, we are working with homeowners who have lower incomes, who need repairs on their homes, and looking at health in the home and on the exterior of the home and what kinds of things we can do to help. And this is a trend nationwide. I can tell you that Habitat affiliates nationwide are building to Energy Star standards and are partnering with agencies like the Green Healthy Homes right. Initiative in addressing those long-term home preservation and health issues
right.
in the homes. Recently, NPR reported that United Healthcare is investing $1.5 billion into affordable housing in many communities across the country because what they know, the data tells us, that health outcomes are improved when our
right.
housing is healthy. It's
right.
that simple.
So a movement to do retrofitting and rehabbing
That's
of
right.
existing homes rather
That's
than
right.
just building. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. And so just tied into that health piece, I want to just mention to our listeners that today, if you're out there thinking about your healthy diet and you go into Whole Foods, your purchase, 5% of your purchase, will come back into supporting local affordable housing solutions through Habitat's program. So happy Earth Day.
Wow.
And make it a great Earth Day by stopping into Whole Foods and picking up your groceries.
Picking up seven items for $120.
Well,
and 5% goes
yeah,
to...
that's right. And so we're grateful.
Sorry. Hold on.
No, I know.
We
it's
like
easy
Whole Foods
to joke.
Too.
It's easy to joke
But that's
about
great.
That.
You're there 5%.
We are today.
All day.
Come by. I'll be there. Say hello. Happy to talk with you.
About and 4 p.m. is the ceremony to...
For the LEED Platinum ceremony, we'll be receiving that plaque from the USGBC and many of the partner stakeholders that we've worked with to accomplish this goal will be present. We'd be happy to see you out there if you want to just drive by and say hello.
Okay, we'll do.
Thank
you. Lisa Schneider, Alan Angle, thank you very much. Both Habitat for Humanity, great news. And thanks for joining us and sharing that.
Thanks so much.
And we'll see you at Whole Foods.
Great.
Thanks for hosting us.
All right, thanks. Hey, let's take a quick break for some underwriters. And when we come back, Brent Giles, Powder Corporation, protect your playground. Stay tuned.
Thanks. Hi, this is Reese DeMille with Republic Services, your local source for recycling and garbage service and a proud sponsor of KPCW's This Green Earth. As you recycle, please remember, glass cannot go in your residential curbside recycling bin. Help keep Summit County Recycling clean. SummitCountyRecycles.org.
Foothill Oriental Rugs has been an underwriter on KPCW for over 20 years. I'm Jim Weber, owner, rug buyer, and Park City resident. As a direct importer since 1985, from traditional to contemporary to tribal, Foothill Oriental Rugs is Utah's complete rug source. Foothill Oriental Rugs is located 2 miles north of the mouth of the canyon in Salt Lake City at 1460 Foothill Drive.
Back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability, and Happy Earth Day. We're celebrating Earth Day by talking about some of the great things that are going on around the town, around the nation, with respect to people enacting a smaller footprint on the planet.
That's right, a little bit at a time.
Fewer resources and less gobbling up less of the planet's resources. And as an example of that, joining us is Brent Giles. He's the Chief Sustainability Officer at Powder Corporation. All right, Brent, thanks for joining us. And you're here to talk about the winners of the Protect Your Playground contest.
Yes, Protect Your Playground. We started this initiative last fall, and... It's been really, really very successful, in my opinion. We had over 50 applications throughout all of the Powder resorts. The green teams at those resorts made their choices, and we are going to fund 18 of those projects.
18?
18 to the tune of around $40,000. And it's just really, really a huge success. I thought it would be a success if we had... one from every resort that we were able to fund, but man, oh man.
Well, you got the word out. You got the word out.
This is amazing.
And I'm curious about how many school-age kids submitted applications. I thought that was a great opportunity for kids.
That was a great opportunity, but not that many, okay. Although we did have several schools submitted. Schools that are working on greenhouses to raise their own vegetables for their schools. A school that's working on a sustainability fair. So we had a few of those that we are going to fund at some of the areas. Here in Park City, we have funded three, which was we have Collin Beach here for composting.
Okay.
We funded a project with Laura Lee Albright to work with transportation companies within the valley to try to audit their footprint and reduce their footprint.
Okay.
And we had Ryan Hayes at Park City Mountain Resort that wants to install some solar lighting at a location. So
okay. Well, we have Collin. Like you said, we have Collin here in the studio. Laura Lee joins us by phone. Laura Lee, are you there?
I sure am.
All right,
hi.
Thanks.
Good morning to you, Laura.
Why don't you guys spend a couple minutes talking about your projects and what they're all about. Laura Lee, let's start with you.
Sure. Thank you, Chris, and thank you, Lynn, and thank you, Brent, for including me in this great conversation, and Happy Earth Day to everyone.
Yes.
Thank you.
It's a wonderful day, and I appreciate the generosity of Powder Corp and the Green Team and Brent for recognizing an opportunity to make a significant difference in carbon footprint in Park City.
Right. So what is your project all about?
Sure. My project is to get an understanding of carbon emission footprints, primarily through commercial vehicles in our community, and work with them to reduce and put into place programs to replace less efficient vehicles with cleaner burning vehicles, and also work on ways to reduce mileage.
Right.
We just all could benefit in cleaning our environment for now as well as in the future.
Now, Laura Lee, are you doing this just in the Park City community?
I would like to start it here and then take what we learn to other communities. I think other communities could benefit. Firstly, just want to focus in our local community and see what changes we can help and begin immediately. I think there's great opportunities.
Like anti-idling. That's
yes.
Got to be a big component of what you're doing, right?
Yes, I see that often, and I really would like to just help make people more aware of the emissions that are a result of idling. And just the simple motion of turning off the engine saves gas, protects our air, and our health.
Right. So this is for commercial vehicles. Is this strictly an educational program, or are you actually going to go up to the FedEx driver and tell him to shut his vehicle off?
Well,
more
all
aggressive.
Of that. We want to educate, and we want to help put new actions in place that will correct bad behaviors and put some funding together to help companies who want to invest in cleaner burning vehicles.
Okay, so what? How do you measure your success in that sense?
I think we measure it in many different ways. I'm glad you asked. We want to start by looking at the present footprint. So I'm working with a few companies who can give us an image of our present footprint. So I think that's very important to get a scientific basis.
Right.
And also then just look at each individual company, what they are doing from a mileage standpoint, a gas consumption standpoint, and individually on each vehicle, what sort of challenges they may have and how we could improve each vehicle to be more clean.
Well, on a personal level, in the last few weeks, I've started to shut my car off when I'm at a stoplight that I know that I have enough time that I'm going to be there for more than a few seconds. I just shut the car off, and I've started to log the total amount of time that it's off over the course of a day or my trips. I don't drive that much. But over the course of a week, I've been averaging somewhere between 12 and 15 minutes of my car being off. Okay, and that's imagine, going out, starting your car, and just let it run for 12 to 15 minutes. That's fuel, that's air pollutants, and that's, of course, money. And it's not that difficult. I have a Subaru Outback, and I just shut it off. It's a little odd at the first.
Do you get people
silence.
Honking behind you?
Well, you've got to be
–
you have to be engaged. Yeah. You have to know what's going on.
Not distracted.
But that's something that – I'm changing my behavior, and I'm seeing the value of that, and I'm quantifying it.
And it's easy.
And it's not that difficult.
That's right.
Okay.
I applaud you. That's great, Chris, and more of us could take that same action and just help our environment be more clean.
Oh, I look for the day that I can go be sitting in Kimball Junction and it'd be quiet.
Cars are off.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay, well, let's turn to Colin. We got a few more minutes. Colin, you're with Low Stump Tree Service. You've been on before. Tell us about your project.
Certainly. So thanks for having us again.
Yeah.
So with our tree business, we produce a lot of wood chips from our tree trimmings, and we have started combining that with food scraps that we source from the local ski resorts. They're trash, essentially. We mix the food scraps in with our wood chips, throw it on a blower system, and in about 6 months, we get nice fresh compost.
This is great. So, you do this out in Browns Canyon somewhere, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So what is the biggest challenge to get the resorts to throw their scraps in a pile? And even do they have to separate scraps as well? I'm sure.
They do. There's quite a bit of work on their end, which we're really happy that they put that effort in. So currently we can only accept fruit and vegetable waste. So they have to sort out all the meat So mostly we're back of house operations in the kitchen where they're collecting this material. Over this summer, we're planning on pouring a concrete pad out there, which will allow us to expand to what we call whole plate composting, where literally anything that grows or lives can then be returned back to the compost.
Wow.
So,
And so this grant then that you got from Protect Your Playground and Powder Corp will help you pour that pad, or how much was the grant that you got?
So we received $2,800 from Powder Corp, and that money will be used to purchase an instrument which measures the oxygen and temperature levels in our pile. And that allows us to fine-tune our blower system, our cycle times, and it will increase the amount of material we're able to have on site and hopefully bring more customers on
board. Right, improve efficiency and then increase volume.
Exactly.
Brent, just a couple more minutes. The program sounds like a roaring success.
It is a roaring success.
Any plans for another?
We'll go again next year.
All right.
This summer we'll be working with the Woodwards for Protect Your Playground with them. And it just goes to prove that one person can make a difference.
Exactly.
I need you to just quickly talk about the solar-powered lights over.
Yeah.
It's a bank of mailboxes.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yeah. So there's been issues with this, with the mailboxes and vandalism and things like that. But the whole project is, the basis of the project is that, you know, the city won't let them have solar lighting, right? And so they're hoping that they can actually get this done, get solar lighting done over these mailboxes and start to change, you know, some of these policies so that we'll see, you know.
Right.
Some of these projects will be more successful than others in that way as far as putting them in motion.
Yeah.
But every project will be a success as far as awareness. So it's just great stuff.
Well, fantastic work. Is the award winner's information on the website?
Now, yeah, that's going through Park City Mountain Resort, so it should end up on the website there.
So
they're doing a press release today.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so everything will be done through them and through each individual resort.
All right. Brent Giles, he's Powder Corporation's Chief Sustainability Officer. Thanks for coming by, along with Colin Beach and Laura Lee Albright. Again, thanks for joining us and telling us all about your award-winning projects. And we look forward to the next Protect Your Playground.
Bring it on.
I got ideas.
Thank you.
Let's take a break for the last underwriters. We'll be back to wrap up. It's This Green Earth.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longrimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-LAW.com. Brett Stimson, Mortgage Assistant for Home Purchases, 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Hey, it's This Green Earth, special Earth Day presentation, and it was a great show. Thanks, Lynn Werpeek, for guest co-hosting.
Oh, well, thanks for having me, and thanks to our wonderful guests, Dee Williams, Lisa Schneider, and Alan Nagel of Habitat for Humanity.
Right, and Brent Giles from Powder Corporation and the Protect Your Playground Project. Let's thank our underwriters, for whom this show would not be possible. They include Republic Services,
Habitat for Humanity's Restore,
Vail Resorts,
Rocky Mountain Power,
San Francisco Design,
and Prudential Utah Real Estate.
Of course, you can always join us on Facebook, KPCW, This Green Earth. Give us your thoughts and ideas, comments about the show or future shows. You email us your thoughts, too, at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org. Lynn, thanks again. What's on the mountain life? You have 10 seconds next.
The mountain life. We've got essentialism we're talking about tomorrow. We'll also be joined by a local doctor, Phil Davidson, and he's that hip and shoulder expert. He'll be talking about cartilage restoration, joint resurfacing. Join us.
Oh, my God. Okay. Joint resurfacing and essentialism. That's the mountain life tomorrow at 9 a.m. Hey, don't forget, this is KPCW 91.9 FM, Park City. Only in Park City, only on KPCW.